All right, the Parsha Tzitzaveh. I will tell you, there's quite a bit in this Parsha that we could possibly go into. I'm only going into mamish the tiniest little bit, but I'm going to explain it in such a way you've never heard this before in your life. This is mamish the Hasidish Torah of Parsha Tzitzaveh. Pure, pure Hasidish Torah. Be'atov, Tzitzaveh B'nei Yisrael, you should command B'nei Yisrael, V'yichwe lecha shomezai yizoh, kosis lama or lahalos ner tamid. Take for yourself pure olive oil, crushed to be lit, to light up the candle continuously. Aaron and his son should do it there by Then afterward, it says, bring him close to you, make big day Kodesh, and all of a sudden the parsha goes into a totally different subject, make him big day Kodesh. You gotta make him 8 different pieces of clothing for the Kohanim head yotim, they only have 4. Totally different thing. So first of all, what in the world is going on at the beginning of the parsha that we start talking about the menorah? It starts going into this thing in the middle of nowhere. In the middle of nowhere. Number two, we know, and it's famous, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned in this parsha. What's the pshat that Moshe Rabbeinu's name isn't mentioned? Everybody says it's the Kohen Gadol. It's the parsha of the Kohen Gadol, and Moshe Rabbeinu lost the ability to become the Kohen Gadol. He said, send Aaron instead of me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, fine, Aaron will be the Kohen Gadol, you'll be the lady. You'll be the lady. That's what he was told. So he's missing from this parsha because he said, Mechini Nami Sifracha, you raised me, okay. That's the famous pshat over here. There's a connection. What's the connection between Moshe Rabbeinu being missing, the whole parsha of Big Day Kuna, and then all this, starting off the parsha with Lalo's Ner Talmid, with the menorah. What's the idea behind it? It's so awesome. And then, how does that connect to Purim? Then you got to bring it back to Purim. So where does it all come from? Okay. Shout out like this. There's a Gemara that says, Bamashi Mish Moshe. How did Moshe get to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? He obviously did not wear Big Day Kuna, because he wasn't a Kohen. So how could he have served in the Beis HaMikdash? He was the Kohen Gadol, per se. So what did he do? How could he have, what clothing did he wear? So the Gemara answers, he wore Big Day Lavan. A white piece of clothing, a chaluk lavan, just one piece of white clothing, a ksonis, basically. He just wore that. He didn't wear anything else, but it was a special piece of clothing. It wasn't the Kohanim, the Kohanim's clothes, special piece of clothing. The Kedushas Lev Reblivitz and Mirodichev says every color represents a mida, a certain mida. There's different colors that are used. Red, green, and white are used for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram is white, Yitzchak is red, and Yaakov is green. He goes through what the pshat is behind that. He says white is called ayin. White is called ayin. Aleph yud nun. That means as if it's not there. What's pshat behind that? Okay, what is white? What is the color white? So you think if you look at white, it looks like it's the absence of all colors, and black is the combination of all colors. It's not true. It's the exact opposite. Black is when there's no other colors there, then it's black. But if you add all the colors together and you blend them together, you come out with white.
Only with white.
Brown. What?
Only with
white.
Tried it before.
True. I said a blend, not a combination. It's got to be a blend of all the colors together. It comes out to be white. It is the all colors together come out to be white. Now, is that unbelievable? White looks like there's nothing there. It doesn't look like there's anything in this napkin over here. The napkin looks like that it's just something that is devoid of colors. But it's not true. It's all the colors together that puts it in there. If a person is so great that he has everything all together, that makes you ayin. That means you're not in this world. It's as if you can't see the person in this world. He's devoid of any substance. That's the point behind it. That white is, there's so many colors blended in, you can't even see the colors anymore. You can't even see anything around there. That's the idea behind it. If you look in Vayakol Pekudei, and part of Vayakol Pekudei by the Mishkan, it says, by the Mishkan itself, when they're building the Mishkan, they made the Aron, they made the Mizbeach, they made the Menorah, they made the everything. Everything that's mentioned, it doesn't say the word Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. It says, they built this, they built that, they did this, they did that. Only at the end does it say, and even by then it says it a little bit differently, everything they did as Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu. But it didn't say it in the wording of Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. By the Big Day Kahuna, it says by every single one, they made the Tzitz, Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. They made the Mechasai, Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. They made the Ksones, Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. 19 times in Parsha Pekudei it uses the word Kasher Tzivah Shavas Moshe. And not once does it say it by the Mishkan and Parsha Vayakim. What's pshat behind that? because the Mishkan represented Bnei Yisrael on their different levels. There are people who are in the Aron Kodesh, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There are people who are there. There are people who are just the Menorah, which means pure Chachma. There are people that are by the Shulchan, which is pure Parnasa. There are people that are by the Mizbeach, that are willing to be Moser Nefesh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Each one represents a different part of the Mishkan. And that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to understand. Oh, there are different levels, there are different people that are everywhere. Therefore, you don't need Kashrut Tzivah Shabbos Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to understand that as it was. But to get to the level of Kahuna Gedola, we'll explain what that is in a second, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't get up there. It was a level that was beyond him. A level of where the Kohen Gadol enters inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, the level of where the Kohen Gadol is in a different world, where he can talk to Malachim, and where the Malachim are there with him inside, it's a totally different world. That's something that even Moshe Rabbeinu cannot get up to. Even Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there. He wasn't there. It's a huge, huge level. We'll get to that in a second. So by the Kahuna, it's Moshe Rabbeinu is not on that level, unless he's in the midst of a speech with God. Because when he's talking to God, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu raises him to the level of where he is a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why by the Mishkan, it doesn't say Kashrut Tzivah Hashem Moshe. That's something that Moshe Rabbeinu could understand on his own. But by the Big Day Kahuna, which is something that Moshe Rabbeinu could not fathom on his own, then it says Kashrut Tzivah Hashem Moshe by every single one to lift him up and put him in a level where he would be able to understand it, and that's Kashrut Tzivah Hashem Moshe. Here we go. Parshas Tetzaveh is about the Big Day Kahuna. Moshe Rabbeinu could only accomplish that when he's not in this world, when he's Ayin. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not in the Parsha. Because in Metzias, Moshe Rabbeinu would never be able to fathom the secrets behind the Big Day Kahuna. He's not on that level. Only when he's Ayin, when he's completely devoid of any substance on this planet, we'll call it, that's when he can be understand and fathom the ideas of the Big Tikkunah. So he's not in the Parsha. He can't be here. It's impossible for him to be here. That's the idea behind it, and that's the idea behind why he's not there. And we have to understand that. What in the world does it mean that there's something about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol? What does that clothing have to do with anything? What does it do? So here we go. Also, you got to understand, why is it called the Kohen Gadol? Why does it call him the Kohen HaYachid? Kohen HaYachid. Or, I don't know, whatever you want to call him. Why the Kohen Gadol? So the first Shlomo, the Radamsker, says that why was Moshe Rabbeinu the leader? Because he was Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. He was willing, time after time after time again, to kill himself for the Jews. He was willing to say, God, kill me. As long as Bnei Yisrael gets what they need to get, I'll die. I don't mind dying. Just let Bnei Yisrael get whatever they need to get. He's willing to argue with God to the point of, Mechemino Misifrecha. You erase me out of the Sefer. I don't want to be around. Just let the Jews live and I'll kill myself for it. I don't care if I die. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do, and that's why he was able to be a leader. He considered each Jew to be his own son. Not only a brother, his own son. He was willing to say that this kid is my own son. You know you'd sacrifice everything you have for your own kids. I hope so. Each time he davened, he brought down for Bnei Yisrael chesed and rachamim and all the good things that he possibly could. That's his job. Every time that he sat there, a father says to his kid, I'll give you everything you want. Everything you want. Whatever you need, I'll take care of you. Kohen Gadol was so much more powerful. Not only did he have the ability to give it to Bnei Yisrael, he was able to give it to the entire world. He was able to feel a brotherhood with every person in the entire world, not just a Jew, but the other people on the street. He was able to look at a janitor in the middle of nowhere, a guy who would steal your shirt off your back, steal your shirt. He was able to look at him and be like, I love you. He was, and be able to say it honestly. Not like go out there and be like, I love you. Just stay away from me. It's like an honest feeling of, I love you. I really want everything good for you. He was willing to give everything he had. He was willing, can you imagine this? Willing to kill himself for that janitor. Kill himself for the janitor. Oh, you mean the janitor needs an extra $5? I'll die. I'll give him everything off my back. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to do. He wasn't willing to have a dollar for himself. As long as Klal Yisrael had everything they needed, he didn't want to take anything. That's the idea behind him. And that's the idea behind the Kohen Gadol. Moshe Rabbeinu told Aaron this idea in the beginning of this whole thing. Parakof Ches Pasagawa. Ve'ata, you, Aaron, hakreve lecha. You have to be makriv of yourself. Now, that's not the Pasha meaning of the Pasuk. The Pasha meaning of the Pasuk is, you should bring close Aaron and his children in order to take care of it. The wording is for Moshe Rabbeinu to Aaron. You got to be makriv of yourself. Are you ready to sacrifice yourself for not just the Jews, for everyone in the world? Are you ready to do that, Aaron? And yeah, you love every Jew. Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. I know you're Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom by the Jews. Are you willing to do that for the world? Be willing to do that for every single person. And that's what Mashiach is supposed to do. To bring peace to the whole world. Not just to us. It's going to be something where even the Arabs sit there and they say, oh, we're supposed to leave. Can you imagine somebody getting up and saying that? Where all those suicide bombers are just like, oh, he's right. It's going to be almost an impossibility where everyone understands this is the best for every single person in the entire world. They're supposed to understand that. Moshe Rabbeinu said, are you ready to do that? That's how going on Gadol Me'achiv. He's the greatest among anybody because he's not just from Bnei Yisrael. He's a person who understands everything and to do everything altogether. And that's why he carries on him not only the Choshen that had all the 12 Shvatim on it, but he also had the Shemayim Beis, the name of God that had 72 letters that contained every single secret you can ever imagine in the world. Anything you could ever want, Yaakov, all there in the Shemayim Beis. It's all there. All you have to do is think about it and you can get everything you want. He had it because he needed to do good for everyone down there. But when someone does this, what automatically happens? Something just doesn't allow it to happen. Something gets involved. There's mekatrigan, accusers. There's the mashchisim, the destroyers, and the mazikin, the damagers. They come down. They're known as shadim. They're known as malachim mashchis, who come down and try to make sure that that doesn't happen. They take down the Kohen Gadol, and they try to destroy him. They try to knock out the good thoughts out of his head, try to put in a tummy thought. They make him do anything they can so that they can grab the Tova themselves, so that they can make sure that that goodness doesn't go to the people of the world, doesn't even go to the Jews, doesn't go anywhere, that it stays by them, and they can keep all the good stuff themselves. So what do you need? You need a shmira. You need some type of protection from these shadim, from these mazikin, from these destroyers. So what kind of protection are you going to have? If you didn't have them, you wouldn't have a perfect world. In order to have a perfect world, you need to have someone going up against you. Otherwise, it's not a challenge. If you were just good and there would be nothing else but goodness in this world, you wouldn't be able to have a real challenge. There's nothing holding you back from doing it. You know, you gotta have a challenge. You gotta have a challenge here. And that's what this world's all about. The challenge is that a person has it every time. Whether or not I should text in the middle of a shir, or whether or not I should pay attention or do anything else. All these things. Talk to you. But either way, no, not a problem. So either way, for a person to be able to sit there and to say to himself that every single thing that I need to have that shmir from the mazikins. Here we go. This is the pshat. In order to make sure that you're protected, you need to have something called an or hamakif. A surrounding light. Something that surrounds you to be able to make sure that your Tara stays safe and that there's no Tuma anywhere near you. We wear Talis and Tefillin in the morning. If you think about it, that is the perfect Oramakis. The Talis surrounds you. The Tefillin puts the Kedusha on you and spreads it throughout your body. The purpose behind the Talis and Tefillin is just for that reason. To spread the Kedusha around your entire body and to keep that Kedusha in. So that your Tefillahs go straight up without any Mashchisim anywhere around you. So that the Mashchisim can't come anywhere. That's why the Hasidim wear the Talis over their heads, the whole davening. To not let anyone near you. Not let anyone come anywhere close to you. That you're surrounded with Kedusha and the Tumah can't break itself in. It can't knock itself inside you. It's sitting there and you're totally surrounded completely without any problem. The Kohanim did something different. They wore the Big Day Kuna. They wore Big Day Kuna all over their bodies. They had the Ksonis. They had the Mechnasayim. They had the hat. They had the belt. They had the tzitz. They had the Choshen. They had the Ephod and they had the Me'il. They had all eight clothing, the Kohen Gadol especially, but the Kohen himself had all those clothing to be able to protect them in every single thing they did. So that the Chesed and the Shefa that the Kohen Gadol had to bring down came down without any issues whatsoever. By the Kohanim, they only had four begotten. They only needed that amount because the Kohen Hedya was not as problematic. We'll call it that way. They weren't as problematic. The Mazikin are attracted to Kedusha. When they see the Kohen Gadol, all they want to do is grab that Kohen Gadol and take everything away from it. What happens if they don't wear the Big Day Kuna? What happens if they're a Kohen and they serve but they're not wearing the hat, let's say? If they're a Kohen Gadol and they don't wear the tzitz, the little headband. So what happens? The whole avodah is tussle. You know why? Because it's not going anywhere. It's not going to Shemayim anyway. If they're missing a tiny little bit of this Or HaMakif, a tiny little bit of the clothes that protect you from the Mazikin grab this stuff anyway. When you say Kriya Shema without tefillin, without a hetzer, unless there's a hetzer for it, you say Kriya Shema without tefillin in the morning, you just stop say Kriya Shema, there's no protection. It's not going straight to Shemayim. The Mazikin grab it. Is it better not to say it at all? That's a different question altogether. But the Mazikin grab that Kriya Shema. Halachically, you got to say Kriya Shema anyway, even if you don't have stone. But the idea, the Hasidic meaning behind it is, and I say that with a little oomph, is that the purpose behind why we wear tefillin and talis? Because if we don't, then the tefillah doesn't go anywhere. The tefillah goes nowhere. The tefillah is not brought up to Shemayim. Only if your mamish so into it that you could be bokeh the olamos, you can crack through the olamos without talis and tefillin, then it'll work. But otherwise, it's just not going to work. That's the idea behind it, and that's the idea behind the big dekuna. Okay, it's just one thing. So what's with the menorah? What's with the menorah? Such an unbelievable thing. Lighting. When did they light the menorah? Come on, guys. When did they light the menorah? Every day when? Right as Shkia. Me'erev ad boker. From evening until morning. It didn't go during the day. It went from evening until morning. Right? What's pshat? Because what's nighttime? Nighttime is the time when the chitzonim are strong. When the shadim are strong. When the mazbikin have the most time. In that time of Tumah, it's hard for anything good to happen. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu only spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu during the day. Unlike every other Navi, you spoke at night with the Nevuah while they were sleeping so that they would be in a different world. Moshe Rabbeinu could not speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at night. He only spoke to him during the day. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu's powers were used during the day because the day was the time of where good things happen, where chassadim and good things happen. Nighttime was the time of mazikin. And Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't break through while being awake that koach of the shadim to knock out everything. So what did they do? They lit up a menorah. And when they lit the menorah, it was ki'ilu, it was day, says its Tiferes Yonas, Rav Yonas, and Aichis. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu even at night because we lit the menorah. That's why, who lit the menorah? Aaron and his two sons, the Kohanim Gadolim. The Kohen Gadol has to light the menorah. What's the stomach job that all of a sudden, Nisan Bahar can get up there and go ahead and take care of it himself? It wasn't just stomach job. The Kohen Gadol had to go and light and have kavana that now what I'm doing is destroying the night. I'm destroying every mazik in the entire world by using the big day kahuna. And by him going ahead and lighting was able to make sure that the davening happened and that everything happened in the right way. And was lahalos ner tamid. You know what lahalos ner means? He was able to keep the neshamos of Klal Yisrael clean in the middle of the desert where all the chitzonim were. Okay. Anybody know what happened during the day? Okay, it lasted until the morning. And then what? What? There was one nair that stayed lit. It didn't go out. The nair Maravi. Machlokas, what is the nair Maravi? Some say it's the middle light. Some say it's the one all the way on the left. Some say it's the second one from the left. Very, very strange machlokas. But there are three machlokas about which one is the nair Maravi. Because we don't know. What? No, because it's a question how the menorah faced. If the menorah faced north-south or west-east. And if it faced north-south, then the middle one was a little bit to the west, and that was considered the west one. If it is west, what? It's a machlokas which one to place within the building plan. How the Torah puts it. So west-east, if it was west-east, then it's most probably the one on the left. But there's a diyuk that the Or HaChaim makes that it could not, maybe it's not the one that, it's the near closest to the Maravi, which is the second light. So either way, there's a big machlokas which one is the one that's lit continuously. Let me ask you a question. On Hanukkah, we celebrate the nays that the candle stayed lit for 8 days straight. That happened every single day during the first Beis Hamikdash and the Mishkan. So what's the big deal? And it probably happened during the second Beis Hamikdash. What? Open miracles, you're saying. But in the second Beis Hamikdash, there were still some miracles. There were still certain things. For example, the Mizbeach still had a fire that went to Shemayim. The fire still went up. The smokestack still went up. There were some miracles that still happened, like the flies were not around the Beis Hamikdash where there were all these meat hanging things, and still there were no flies there. There were still some miracles. They weren't open miracles, but there were miracles. Here's something which in theory could have been another miracle, and it could have happened during the second Beis Hamikdash. Still, why is that? This is something that's so normal. We always have the candles lit. So all of a sudden, Hanukkah had stayed lit for 8 days, and that's something. What's the big deal of making such an ace? Because to last during the day, when did you light it? You lit it right before the night. And it lit naturally all night long. And then that miracle was that during the day, it stayed lit until the next night. Until the next night. To have a miracle during the day is pashit. Because the day is the time for miracles to happen. The day is a good time. When do you not expect miracles to happen? At night. Night is the time when you don't have the miracles. Night is the time when you look at yourself and say, this is not a miraculous time. This is the time when miracles should not be happening. This is the time when no miracles should happen. So the fact is, during Hanukkah, when it stays lit not only during the day, but even the nights following, Not just the daytime, which miracles were obvious, but even in the night, that's what we celebrate in Hanukkah. Because there's no such thing as miracles happening in the middle of the night. It didn't happen. We do something normal in the middle of the night. We don't do extra miracles, and that's why Hanukkah is an extra big miracle that doesn't make any sense. And the remez is obvious, that even in a time of Choshech, when it's Golus Yavon, even then, miracles can happen. That just like during the night, the menorah stayed lit, that remez is supposed to be that even in a time of Choshech, when it looks really bad, and there's Golus Yavon, and you think, there's no way God's going to do a miracle. Even then, miracles happen. Even then, crazy things happen. Even in a time of Purim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't show himself and doesn't allow himself to be written in the Megillah itself, and even in a time of Golus, where there's a huge war going on in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's the 67, the 73, or 2009, during any one of these wars, it clearly is a yad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which he's telling you, it's a time of Golus, and I'm still there for you, and I'm still helping you out, and I'm still doing this and that and the other, and making sure everything's okay. That's the remez. Yeah, the menorah. Not with the election. Well, he doesn't want to be involved. That's pure kosher. Are you talking to Gedolei Yisrael in the secular world? Good call. Okay, fine. So either way, that's the idea behind. And all of a sudden, they decided the remez is so obvious, that's what we're making a miracle about. Everybody hear the whole machlokas, the whole thing, the whole question. I don't understand. What's the miracle that we're celebrating Hanukkah for? Is it because the menorah stayed lit for 8 days, or because we won the war? And everybody asks, what is it? And they say, famous answers, really the miracle is only 7 days, so why the eighth day? Is it the first day is because they won the war? Then 7 days extra, because the menorah stayed lit for the extra 7 days. Famous one of the answers, the Beis Yosef, famous kash, why we have 8 days. It's all together. It's the same answer. The reason why it stayed lit for those 8 days was because the Kaddish Baruch was trying to be Marames to them, that I'm with you even in a time of darkness. I'm with you even when bad things happen. And that's why it starts off Parshas Tetzaveh, which goes into the idea behind the Kohen Gadol lighting up the menorah and showing us that even when there's dark times, you're in the middle of a midbar, I'll protect you. Even when the Chitzonim and the Shlitas Chitzonim, when the Mazikin and the Shadim are all there trying to grab your tefillah, I'll protect you. You've got to have an Or Makiv, and I'll protect you. We start off this whole Parsha with Shemen Zayazach. It's unbelievable how the eighth Parsha in Parsha Shmos, the eighth word is Shemen, and Shemen Zayazach, the pure olive oil, are eight letters altogether. See, Miram is the miracle of Hanukkah. It's all eight. I had a board once that if you take Moshe Rabbeinu out of the Parsha, you take the Atah out of there, then the 25th letter is the Shin of Shemen Zayazach. It's the 25th letter in the Parsha. You can't really take Atah out of there, regardless. But it's not a good board because you can't do that. But Lamaisa, it's Pashit. And who's it told to? Who's the one who's supposed to light it up? Who's the one who's supposed to do Shemen Zayazach? Aaron, the Kohen. Because the whole Shabbat HaKadosh was Sakash Madayim. That's what they were there for. The whole idea behind it was that. And that's why Kohanim and Chashmonayim, if you put them together, Kohanim plus the word Chashmonayim, is the gematria 580, which is the gematria of Lilith, as we've said before, plus Sam. When you combine Lilith and Sam together, and you have the Tuma, the pure Tuma, of the Shlitas HaKitzonim of Nukva and the Shlitas HaKitzonim of Dukra, and you put them together and you come out with the number 580, which is the gematria of Seir, you should all know. Same gematria is Esav, that's another thing altogether, of Esav plus Tzayid. If you put them all together, Lilith and Sam equals Seir, which is 580, which is what the Kohanim and the Chashmonaim were trying to get at. Because the whole point behind the Kohanim and the Chashmonaim is that they take away the darkness with the light. Only they were royal to be able to defeat the Yavanim. And what did Yavan stand for? Yavan standed for Choshech. That's the old shot that during those times it was all dark. Yavan stood for all the Choshech in the world. That Choshech and the Torah, the Medrash says, stands for Yavan. The whole idea behind it is this. And that's their job. And that's why Parshat Tzav is for them. That's why they're there. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned at all. Because it's not his job. It's not Mashiach's job to take care of this little thing of Choshech. That's not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Ayin. He remains behind the scenes, davening for Klal Yisrael, while Aaron is the one that does the dirty work. Aaron is the one that goes in there and takes care of everything. And that's the idea behind Purim. The entire idea behind Purim. of a time of being close to darkness where somebody has to get up and save them. The difference is that over there, there wasn't a full savior. Why wasn't it a full salvation, I should say? Why wasn't it a full salvation? Because Mordechai was from Shevet Binyamin. Shevet Binyamin doesn't have the power to be able to do a full salvation. And Ahasuerus still remained king. An unbelievable thing that we celebrate a chag in the fact that we killed some of Amalek, but not all of them. And we still remained avodim to a king Ahasuerus. And we weren't even able to build up the Beis HaMikdash again. Mordechai went up to Ahasuerus so we could build the Beis HaMikdash now, right? No. Absolutely not.
It led up to it.
Until he died. It led up to it, Darius II, 100% right. So eventually it led up to it. But Ahasuerus himself, I mean, think of the end of Purim. We're all happy. Everything's all good. You know what would be great? Can we build the Beis HaMikdash now? You can't. What a chag! What an unbelievable chag! We're in someone else's land. We killed 500 people in Shushan. And we're like, let's party. Let's party. An unbelievable chag. Many times, the greatest growth that a person can ever have comes out of the darkest moments that a person has. They all say, you hit rock bottom, that's when you start going up. I don't know if it's true. I've never hit rock bottom. I keep trying. But I'm never down there. But that's when you're supposed to get up. The Ben Ish Chai gives an unreal medrash. I totally forgot to look it up. I have an asterisk right there that tells me, go look it up. But my kid had a splinter and I spent a half an hour trying to get them all out. Not just one. It was eight. So it was a lot of splinters. And I just remembered right now that I forgot to do it. I will tell you the basic synopsis of the story. But the Ben Ish Chai says, there was a Talmud of Rebbe Akiva who was very into... Stop it. So either way, there was a Talmud of Rebbe Akiva who was very into his learning, but very into the physicality of life as well. And he got very involved with a certain Zona. And the Zona didn't want to be together with him, but the Zona knew the Kedusha of this guy because she used to go by the Beis Medrash and she realized she shouldn't be together with this guy. So the Zona went ahead and while they were together, did something, passed gas in the midst thereof. And the guy became so disgusted that he would never be together with a woman ever again. Never be together with a woman ever again. And Rabbi Akiva said, I'm sorry? Dama Ben Asini is not Jewish. Ben Azai? No, not right.
Isn't there a case where the same person, a different person with a donor, and the same thing happened, and he went to sit on a mountain, right?
Oh, to the mountain. That is with a guy. I don't know if it was specifically that. Oh, just like this. You're right. Where the woman said, just like this gas will never come back, so too you will never do tshuva. One of the weirdest gemaras I've ever seen before in my life. Yes, offhand, I don't remember where that is. I'd have to look at it. Is it Megillah? No. No way. No way. Anybody? No, it can't be a Megillah. I'd have to look it up. Lena, I'll look it up tonight. I don't remember who that was. I remember. But the shot behind the story is that even the most mar thing become muscle. You know where we get that from? An olive. What do you know about olives? Have you ever had an olive just on its own? I will be honest when I say this. I've never bitten into an olive before in my life. So I have no idea. But they say bitter. They're bitter. Have you ever had olive oil? Sweet. That's the strangest thing in the world. Why is olive oil sweet while the olive itself is bitter? Says the Ben Ish Chai that the pshat is that the koach of the olive shows us that from the most bitter thing comes the most sweetest thing in the world. And that's why we specifically use Shemen Zayas Zach for the menorah. So even the most bitter thing at the most bitter times, those times can become the sweetest times of all time if you use it correctly and do the right thing. That's the issue with the Eifel. And I'm going to get into the craziest story of Rashi in a second. But you got to start off with the apron. The apron was an apron. A very, very strange looking apron. Which the Kohen Gadol wore, in which it just sort of, it didn't look the right way. The back was covered. And instead of, what do we wear as an apron? You wear, there's strings in the back, right? And there's something covering you in the front. And it covers you all around in the front. That's a regular apron. The apron of the Kohanim, the apron of the Kohen Gadol, was the exact opposite way. It faced backwards. And the strings were in front. Excuse me. And the strings attached to the choshen. The choshen, the breastplate, was right here. And that's where we know the Urim Bitumim was, with all the stones and everything. Behind it was the Urim Bitumim, whether it was Shemos or it was Little God, whatever. We'll get to that in a second. But there was something behind it, the Urim Bitumim, the choshen. But the apron was a backwards type apron that they had in the back. Says it's Pharisee Yonatan. Rabbi Yonatan actions. The Goyim took our idea of the apron and they turned it around. They put the apron in the front and they put the choshen in the back. Because our Kedusha comes from our fronts. We have our Kedusha on the Panim. They have all their powers from the Ahor, from the backside, from that side that's in the back. You ever notice there is an unreal similarity between the way the Koshen works, how it lights up and it lit up the letters of the Koshen, at least according to Rashi? At least according to Rashi, it seems. How the letters lit up, and to their Ouija board. It's not Pasha. It's very Yonis, and Rabbi Yonatan actually speaks about it 250 years ago and says the Ouija board is thousands of years old. And when they saw that the Kohen Gadol had this Ouija board of Kedusha, they made the exact same type of ephod with the Koshen, with the Ouija board in the back. That's where it comes from. And they used to light it up from the back using Shemos HaTuma. They use a 72-letter Shem of Tuma that they put inside there that they used to be able to find out. How did they find out? The same way whoever asked the questions would ask it to the Kohen of Tuma, the priest of Tuma, and the priest would be able to think clearly these Shemos of the Shadim of these Mazikin, and he would be able to light it up in the back, and the person would be able to see his own answer. That's how the Ouija board works. And the exact same thing goes today. It's a little bit less so. You have to move it with your own hands, but you have to be all pole or whatever it is. But it's the exact same thing. It's an ephod of Tuma. It's a pure ephod of Tuma. The Tiferes Yonatan and Rabbi Yonatan Habshit says, the whole thing is called Truffin. Truffin is machlokes if it's a... if you have a firstborn son, you shek him. Take off his head, take out the brain, fill it up with spices, stick it up against the wall, put candles all around it, and you put a little golden plate with the name of Tuma on it, and it'll tell you everything you want to know about the future. That's one way of learning up the Truffin. The other way of learning up Truffin is a Ouija board. Says Rabbi Yonatan Habshitz, it's known as Truffin because it's the word Trufa. He gets this from the Rambam. Trufa is healing. The Ouija board or shechting your bechor and putting his head up on the wall. Both of them are pretty awesome. Both of them are pretty awesome. They're both up there. And sticking them up against the wall. And the whole idea behind it is all coming from the word trufa. It heals. It makes you feel better. It's able to give you everything you possibly would want to know about the future. You know what the pshat is? You ever notice? Human beings, when we nurse our young, when we nurse our babies, we nurse from a makom of bina. The dadin, the breast that they drink milk from a place of bina where the heart is. It's a good place. But by animals, for the most part, with very few exceptions, and to explain them, I'd have to go through very few exceptions. All animals feed their young from the makom aturfa, from their makom erva, from the bottom side of them. Isn't that strange? Very, very strange. The only ones that are not that way are very few animals. Very few animals. Bonobo apes, which are known as a different type of chimpanzee, are one of the only ones that are a little bit different. Certain types of apes, and a couple other different things. I'm sorry? Yeah. B-O-N-O-B-O-S. Those are about it. There's other little things. There's about four animals that go ahead and nurse that way. Most, it's not dolphins, but there are certain types of manatees and dugongs, they're called, that also do it that way, sea cows, and it seems that elephants do the same. But there's reasons for that, and those are other things altogether. But for the most part, all animals that nurse from that place, because an animal gets their koach from the makom aturfa. A person, a real human being, should get their bina, should get everything good from their place, from their heart. And that's the pshat behind it. It says the Ben Ish Chai, that's the difference between them. Okay, here we go. There's a big machlokas between what the Urim Bitumim were. The Ramban says that the Urim Bitumim was a Shemayim Beis that they put inside there. That's one thing. But the Ibn Ezra is absolutely unbelievable, and this is how we're going to end. The Ibn Ezra says, oh no, we have to tell the story of Rashi, that's how we have to end. The Ibn Ezra says, you know what the Urim Bitumim was? Urim Bitumim, and I could go on, I might give a whole share about this next year. Urim Bitumim was a golden and silver statue that they put inside the little fold of the Koshen. There was no shame in there. There were two little statues that they put inside. And it was like the Wrigley Field scoreboard, where there were guys behind there turning the letters on. And those things, when they concentrated, when the Kohen was asked the question, they would come alive, and they would turn on the lights. and they would make those letters light up. He says, for anybody that knows Kabbalah, that's what with the Urim and Tumim refers to. The Ramban screams at him and says he's never learned Kabbalah a day in his life. He's never done anything that has anything to do with Stod. He doesn't know secrets at all. The Ramban screams at the Ibn Ezra. You know what the Pshat and the Ibn Ezra is? The Pshat and the Ibn Ezra is given by the Achronim. It's not little idols. If anybody had a little tiny robot, nobody worships a robot. Nobody does. You think it's a robot? It's an idol. They had little tiny robots that they were able to make that they put inside and they put inside there. And what the pshat is that what could be the most tummy thing in the world, and a avodah zarah, the most tummy thing in the world, it's metame you if you touch it, if you use it. You can't use anything that was mishamish for it. The most tummy thing in the world, if you use it correctly, because a Kadosh Baruch Hu said you should, then it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. The Kruvim. Could there be anything stranger than the Kruvim? I want you to make two golden malachim and put it on the Aron Kodesh. There could be nothing stranger, and they move. When Bnei Yisrael are listening to one another, they face each other. When Bnei Yisrael are not, they turn away. Could there be anything stranger? That the holiest of holies, where we dive into, is straight to two Kruvim. You couldn't find anything stranger. And now all of a sudden you look at it and you say, wait a second. Is the Eichel Azov that bad? Where do you think they got the idea from? You think the Eichel Azov was just all of a sudden, hey, let's make a golden statue? You think they were idiots? Morons? They didn't believe in God? They knew the concept of the Kruvim. They knew the concept of the Ibn Ezra's version of the Urim and Tumim. They knew what Yerovam ben Nevat was going to do later on with the golden cows, that they were going to put one in Dun and one down below, one in Beis El. They knew what Yerovam was thinking, that they needed some type of an ability to connect back to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they thought that this is the way. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu commands it, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks from the Kruvim. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants it, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu says this is the most unbelievable Kadosh Tohor thing in the world. But one mess up can turn you into Yerovam ben Nevat and could be Avodah Zarah for generations. You realize no kings took down those Kruvim. Because they didn't think there was anything wrong with them. No kings took down the ego Azov of Yerovam ben Nevat because they didn't see anything wrong with them. They thought that it was a way of connecting back to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, it's not true. There are certain ways to do it, and there are certain ways you should not. Yerovam ben Nevat was dead wrong. The Kruvim was dead right. How are we supposed to know? You go back to those Gedolei Yisrael, who y'all just said before, messed up the elections. They might mess up elections, but they don't mess up when it comes to Torah. And this, they did not mess up on. You got to know when to say this and when to say that. Last thing. You know what you go to? Rashi. Rashi says by the Ephod, I don't know what the Ephod is, but my heart tells me the following. My gut tells me that here's the Ephod. It's an apron and it's tied around the back and everything like that. Isn't it unbelievable? Rashi quotes a Medrash, the Ramban argues. Rashi quotes another Medrash, the Ramban argues. Ramban argues on every Medrash Rashi brings. Rashi says, my heart tells me it's this. The Ramban is silent. There's no Rishonim that argue with Rashi. I can't tell you no reason. Out of the Rishonim that I've seen, nobody argues on the pshat of Rashi of what the ephod was, even though Rashi says, I don't know what it is, but this is what my heart tells me. Nobody argues on it. Isn't that unbelievable? You want to hear the story behind how we knew it? How we knew it? The story is the following. It's brought down, I forgot where, and I didn't have it in my notes. It's brought down that one time, Rashi was extremely careful with Shemir Seinai. He never looked up beyond four amos of where he was. He was extremely careful. Mamish was always in his room. He would only go outside when nobody was around. He was unbelievably careful. He would not look at the face of a Rasha, and he wouldn't look at any woman Bechlal. Wouldn't look at any woman Bechlal. Rashi was an unbelievable person when it came to Shemir Seinai. He claimed that, aside from that, he fasted 613 days before he would have perished on the Torah. Not Pashas. Obviously not Pashas. Rashi went ahead, and one time, the window opened in his room, and when he went to close it, he saw outside a woman riding a horse wearing a certain type of an apron that they use while riding horses. This apron is a backwards apron. It had the strings in the front and the apron in the back, where the little thing is in the back. I don't know exactly how it works. Like a cape, almost. Like a cape. That's the sinar that they wear. Rashi saw it and immediately fasted for 40 days. The famous Homaisel Rashi fasted because he couldn't believe that he had seen a woman, and especially a non-Jewish woman. He was extremely upset at himself. But then Lamaise knew if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him something, wanted him to see something, it had to be for a reason. And he said that must be the pshat behind the ephod. And he writes in the parish on Rashi, he says it must be that it's the same sinar that the women wear when they ride horses. He said if HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed it to me, it must be that that's the ephod that's referred to by the Torah, because otherwise I never would have seen it. And that's what he wrote. Nobody argues with him. Most unbelievable thing is nobody. There's not one Rishon that says anything different. Everyone agrees to the basic idea. There are arguments about certain details of it, but they all agree with the basic idea that it's the apron that women wear when they ride horses. You can use the tuma for Kedusha if you know what you're doing. You can make an idol into the holiest of holies of the group. That's what you can do. And you can turn a chag of Chanukah and Purim out of a pure gullus. That's the idea behind the parsha, and that's the whole idea of the big day kuna, you know. Shkai, guys, have a good Shabbos.